And this is BBC Radio 4.
We present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
We start with a cutting from the Goosnair Parish News.
To commemorate the Queen's Diamond Jubilee, Goosnair Parish Council intend to place a commemorative plaque on the village green.
And our thanks to Brian Aldred for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Roisin Connaty. And opposite them on my left, Justin Morehouse and Rory Bremner. Jeremy, why did the hunt become the hunted?
Well, now, you see, I've been away on holiday. Haven't looked at any papers. My life has been good. Got to Malaga Airport last night. Thought, I'd better look at the papers. Bought a newspaper and thought, oh, God. Murdoch, I think, Rupert Murdoch, is as close to a Bond villain as you can get without having charisma. It was sort of,
what an unexpected pleasure, Lord Leveson. When I say unexpected, I certainly wasn't prepared in any way. I had no knowledge of the pleasure. It was shielded from me by someone I won't name. I mean, you sort of want monstrous people to sort of have the eloquence and panache of Hannibal Lecter. But in my experience, when cornered, the truly evil are disappointingly dull, deluded, disingenuous and self-pitying. But, of course, the big story is actually Jezza Hunt. Now, we all feel very sorry for Jezza Hunt because when he had to take over responsibility for the Beast Guy B takeover bid, he was placed in a very difficult position between the Murdoch Empire, who thought the takeover should go ahead, and the Prime Minister, who thought the takeover should go ahead, and reconcile those views with his own view that the takeover should go ahead.
It is bizarre, though, because Hunt has urged the Leveson inquiry to allow him to clear his own name, but technically it reports to him as the Culture Secretary.
It's very rum, and he has the full confidence of the Prime Minister, which probably means Tuesday.
But don't you think they should get James Murdoch to actually take the oath again after lunch? Because there's a high chance that he's forgotten that he took it in the morning. All that stuff about JH, he had these conversations with Jeremy Hunt, and it's quite clear he means JH. And then he says, well, when I said JH, I actually meant Adam Smith, which is AS.
Yeah.
And
easy mistake to make.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, it's BS, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's annoying, though, that Jeremy Hunt, the thing that annoys me is I've hated my name all my life because it tends to...
It's one woman went, ah. Oh.
No, the thing is...
Jeremy's
are invariably knob ends, and then occasionally, from time to time, you know, you sort of think, well, Paxman, he's got a bit of credibility, or like Jeremy Isaacs was quite good at Channel 4. Or
Clarkson.
Well, you see, this is the trouble. Yeah. You've got Beadle, Clarkson, Hunt. I mean, it's a nightmare having my name.
Rupert's a nice name, isn't it? Much nicer than Jeremy.
If you're a bear, it is.
Did you not think that Rupert Murdoch looked like a melting Lord Leveson? It was... it made the television thing very confusing because they kept cutting between them. It was like a sort of before and after skin commercial.
I think I've been suckered into it a little bit because I watch him and I see an old man just there, and I kind of start feeling sorry for him when he's got those hands that, you know, you can't disguise the age on the hands and the jowls. And I feel sorry for him. He seems to have lost his memory sometimes. And then the minute he gets out, he just skips down the street like the end of The Usual Suspects.
I did like the intonation of it. Taking the oath is, I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So, help me, God.
Culture Secretary Jeremy Hunt was targeted by James Murdoch during his testimony to the Leveson inquiry. Emails written by James Murdoch's chief lobbyist, Frederick Michel, appeared to indicate Hunt was in favour of recommending the takeover of B Sky B by the Borgia... the Murdochs. In his testimony, the senior Murdoch, Rupert, acknowledged there had been a cover-up at the News of the World, but insisted that it had been covered up from him. That cover-up to cover up the cover-up was covered up as well, with the information hidden from James Murdoch in his email inbox where he could never be expected to find it. 2 points to Jeremy. Roisin, fancy another dip?
Oh, yes, this is about the... We're back in recession!
Yay!
Yay!
That'll be just you and me excited. Yeah, yeah.
We're back in recession because George Osborne cut everyone's money and then they had no money to buy anything, and he's surprised. But he did say, he's a nice man, he said, if I had a magic wand, I would use it. If I had a magic wand, I would wave it. Cheers, George. Thanks for that. So, like, the idea that he would have a wand and might not use it... shows what a monster he is, that there's been times that he's thought, if I had my wand, I wouldn't even use it.
It also suggests that his chief secretary of the Treasury is Debbie McGee.
And he said they've got no plan B, seems to be what they keep saying. And David Cameron just said, yeah, it's just really disappointing, I've got nothing to say, which is unacceptable. You've got to have something to say. But he hasn't. Not
he's
even...
almost blaming the weather, wasn't he? So, well, I mean, it is. It's been very wet. The economy is shrunk.
Yeah.
I think it's the come down after the excitement from the royal wedding. I think that's what's to blame.
Oh, yes, that's it.
Because everyone was so euphoric about the royal wedding, and then they just thought, but the winter's so dry. After all that excitement, and then April's weather is disappointingly normal and seasonal as it should be. I'm just confused and disoriented, and the economy spirals into recession. That's what happens.
Well, the next thing that they're saying is that the Queen's Diamond Jubilee four-day weekend is going to have a disastrous effect, as if the Queen so far, her not taking a day off, has kept us all afloat. But
on the morning the figures came out, I was walking through Manchester, where I live, and I was approached by my usual big issue seller, who said to me, double dip special, we've held the price.
In fact, one of the things they say, the great fear is that we could end up like Greece.
I love Greece.
Me too. Hot.
The musical or the country.
I don't really mind. I like it. Absolutely fine.
I think actually Cameron's, he was talking the other day about it. He said, look, when we came into power, what was it, 2 years ago as a coalition, look, unemployment was falling and growth was on the way up. Now, it's taken us 2 years, but we've damn well managed to turn that round.
I tell you what is impressive, though, because we have a government completely mired in scandal. We've gone back into recession, and yet Ed Miliband remains unpopular. The UK is officially in a double-dip recession after figures were released showing the economy had contracted 0.2% over the first 3 months of the year. Yes, we're back in recession. And do you know, can I just say about this, I do feel a bit behind the times, because I honestly had forgotten that we'd come out. Well, I didn't understand it. The economy contracted 0.2% in the first 3 months, but the figures have an error margin of 0.2%. Oh. This, we could simply have zero growth, which I've had that since I was six. frankly, no picnic. 2 points to Roisin. Justin, who has been stoking feelings around a cleansing move?
This is the story of Newham Council, the Olympic Borough. It wants to send its residents who are receiving a housing benefit, who are currently in private accommodation, to Stoke, because it's cheaper. They've written to the Housing Association in Stoke, which are called the Brighter Futures Housing Association. Now, that's ambitious. calling a social housing scheme in Stoke Brighter Future, that's like calling Dignitas. Look for the white light, it might be fun after that. I don't know much about Newham, but why pick Stoke? Now, straight away, the giggles, people going, go on, slag Stoke off, we hate Stoke. I'm not. I'm saying, if you want to get rid of people, don't send them to Stoke. It's very handy. It's right on the M6, West Coast Main Line, A50, you're across to the M1. If you want to get rid of people from the East End of London, send them quite far away. Send them to the Outer Hebrides. Get a Cockney enclave going. Call it Very North East Enders. The last time I looked, we were still in Europe. We're still in Europe, aren't we? We could send them to the Costa del Sol. Most of them will have relatives there. It's a strange thing. I mean, call me a romantic old dreamer, if you will, but it seems that in the Olympic Borough of Newham, instead of spending 20 gazillion on a 2-week egg and spoon jamboree, we should be building houses for people to live in.
You really. Crazy thing.
There you go.
That's what's happening. So all the other countries are coming around to London, so London's kind of tidying up. It's a bit like, you know, when somebody's coming around for a dinner party and you get embarrassed about your own house. They say, we can't let them see us live like this. You move all the poor people to Stoke-on-Trent. It's just like you know, putting the rug over a carpet stain or putting all the empty wine bottles in the next door neighbour's.
I do know something about Newham, actually. Vera Lynn. Vera Lynn comes from Newham. Oh. Yeah. Lives in Stoke now.
If someone had told her in 1945 she'd have a brighter future, she wouldn't have believed it, would she?
What I liked is Housing Minister Grant Shapps said the whole affair was an attempt by the BBC to embarrass the government. And you think, no, just when everything was going so well. Of course, if you go to the Midlands from London, you have to get used to some very alien traditions. There's cheap beer, fields, people who are nice to each other. I mean, there's all sorts of...
I like having poor people in London. I'm poor people. I think poor people should stay in London. We'd make London what it is. It's kind of... You know, just
overcrowded.
That's why
I think we've got this idea of the benefit cap all wrong, because I think actually it is...
It is
a real cap. I think it's a benefit cap. It's a real cap that people on benefit will have to wear, and then they doff it.
Just sounds like something very unpleasant for a woman to wear, that's all.
You're not getting any more child benefit cap.
Newham Council planned...
I thought that was a smattering of applause or people removing them.
Newham Council planned to send 500 families to Stoke after claiming they couldn't find enough properties for people on welfare. Similar plans have been suggested by Westminster Council, leading to fears of social cleansing. Westminster Council said that rehousing people on benefits was simply one of the options they were looking at. If all else fails, they're just going to release the hounds. 2 points to Justin. Rory, why might those who lord it over us become more accountable?
Oh, yeah. Oh, this is the House of Lords, obviously, and it's causing a lot of sleepless afternoons over there. It's about the House of Lords. Nick Clegg, who's David Cameron's go-past guy when it comes to reform. This is the coalition agreement where basically David Cameron said, we'll take health, transport, education, defence, treasury and foreign affairs, and you can have voting system and laws reform. There was a committee that said that they thought the House of Lords should be 80% elected,
yeah,
which is 80% more than the government, I think I'm right in saying.
Well, the number of peers should be reduced from 800 to 450, which I would have thought was just a week's worth of natural wastage, but... oh, come on, it's basically a retirement home for the politically bewildered.
But Nick Clegg's actually pushing ahead to reform the House of Lords, which is odd, because I don't remember him promising that he would never reform the House of Lords.
Has anybody ever watched the House of Lords for any period of time? The cameras are on these banks of peers, and there's that many of them slumped to sleep. It's like watching a life-size game of Guess Who halfway through.
I'd love to go in. You know, like a Sunday afternoon, the best time to have a little sleep is if you, like, fall asleep on an armchair and there's, like, the telly on, like a Western or something, and someone pottering in the kitchen. So I can understand why they go in the Lords. Just someone sort of gibbering away. Yeah. No, it's really... And you'd have such a great snooze in there.
Clegg said that they should... Didn't he say we shouldn't have a referendum because that would be outsourcing the decision to the public?
No, subcontracting.
Subcontracting.
Yeah, like it was a bunch of labourers to say, yeah, what's this amendment all about? Yeah. What's going on? Yeah, put out your skip, mate.
If they want to reform it, shouldn't they just call those people in from that 60-minute makeover programme? Take them an hour.
What, look good naked? How to look good naked?
No, isn't there one of those ones where they come into your house and suddenly make it place
you
actually
want to live
in? Oh, yeah, the house.
I think
we
make the people in the Lords, the actual Lords, look good naked.
I've seen that programme, How to Look Good Naked, and the answer to the question is put some clothes on.
A report from the Joint Committee on Lords Reform has said that the House of Lords should be 80% elected, with the other 20% chosen by Britain's Got Talent. A Lords Reform Bill is expected to be a centrepiece of the May the 9th Queen's speech, and I'm sure we're all interested to hear what the Queen can add to the discussion about the outdated, undemocratic institution still clinging to power. So that'll be fascinating.
Rise up and get real!
I think for Rory's professional integrity, we should point out it was Jeremy Hardy doing that.
At the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Roisin have got 4 points, but so too have Justin and Rory. We start round two with a cutting from the outdoor camping magazine read by Charlotte Green.
When camping, it's sensible to prepare for a variety of different conditions. I always bring a general-purpose peg and a broad selection of hookers.
A And our thanks to Donna Blake for sending us that. Jeremy, who wants teenagers to say, no sex, please, we're clever?
Oh, little Mickey Goves had another idea. Michael Gove suggested that in some ways doing well at school might be a better disincentive to early pregnancy than sex education. It's the idea that the poor should be disincentivized from having children. You know, young girls have kids as some sort of validation, but middle class people have children for the same reasons. They just do it slightly later. There's plenty of middle class girls who do very well at school and do very well at university, put in a token 3 or 4 years in marketing, quickly marry somebody, and then pop out one child after another until they've got more than can be fitted into any people carry on God's green earth. And then when they find a people carrier that will hold their preposterously named progeny, they pull up outside nursery and then primary and then secondary, none of which are within walking distance because they've read the SATs, and then rush home because they've got to play tennis and talk about how they don't have enough me time anymore.
I do think Michael Gove talking is oral contraception at its most effective.
He says he's got this idea that more qualified teenagers don't have sex. I mean, how dull a time must he have had at Oxford? You'd think, until you read the Cherworld newsletter in Oxford from 20 years ago, and it talks about a five-in-a-bed romp featuring Michael Gove. Absolutely.
Really?
I'm quoting, it says, new President Gove claims he was only seeking comfort after being beaten up in Aberdeen on Boxing Day. Comes from, it shows back to his five in a bed romp 20 years ago.
The shocking thing about that is that you've actually Googled Michael Gove and five in a bed romp.
I think we have to be clearer with children, don't you? I think I got sex education mixed up with home economics. For years, I thought you put a condom on a cucumber to keep it fresh. I just thought it was a...
My sex education was quite full-on. When I was 12, I was at my best friend's house and we saw her dad put a video into a box on top of the wardrobe. And when we saw, he was sort of like, oh, it's a karate film, girls. Never let me see you in my karate films. And then we weren't interested in karate, but then we watched Karate Kid and then we signed up for karate lessons. And then one Sunday afternoon, we thought, doesn't your dad have a load of karate videos? And we brought it over to my house. We could have watched it at her house, but I wanted to pick up a bag of M&Ms, really make an afternoon of it. So we thought it was a karate film. So we get over and we put it on and my mum caught us. She walked in. I think most mothers on some level anticipate, if they've got teenage sons, anticipate dealing with something like that, but no mother ever anticipates walking in to her 12-year-old daughter's bedroom at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and finding two karate-clad girls watching a hardcore porn film in stone-cold silence eating a bag of M&Ms.
I've got a teenage son now, and I sat him down a few years ago and did that 50-minute kind of, this is a difficult conversation, there are things I'm going to say that I'm going to swear. And after 50 minutes, he just looked at me and went, are you going to tell me you're not my dad? I went, no, he went, is it about sex? I went, yeah, he went, I know.
Michael Gove told a Commons Education Select Committee that educating children well in a range of subjects can be as effective as sex education in stopping them from practicing unsafe sex. Critics denounced it as the most ill-matched combination of speaker and subject matter in the history of select committees. Unaware that in the very next room, Russell Brand was lecturing on home affairs policy. 2 points to Jeremy. Roisin, who's a case of mutton dressed as worm?
Oh, they've cloned a lamb with a roundworm. A roundworm, because lambs are fatty and roundworms aren't fatty. And so if you want lamb, you can now have a lamb that isn't fatty but is half worm.
Is it fair to suggest you haven't entirely understood the science? Peng Peng is a sheep cloned with a worm.
Nick Clegg. It serves as a punchline to anything else where you can't...
Do you suppose a sheep cloned with a worm is difficult to carve? Well, you cut it in half, you get two new sheep.
I
it's a great breakthrough, because up until now, you know, sheep have been very difficult to keep on the hook when you're fishing for wolves.
It's a Chinese thing. China has 7% of the world's arable land, but 22% of the world's population. But it seems to me, if the Chinese are going to work on animals in this way, what you really want is a duck that is born both crispy and aromatic.
But by crossing sheep with a worm, they actually, as a byproduct, they have become the world's leading exporter of draft excluders.
Bleating draft excluders.
Well, they'll actually be great for the next series of One Man and His Dog, won't it? Because in future, the shepherd will just be standing in an empty field and he'll blow his whistle and all these sheep will emerge from the ground, followed by this sort of suffocating collie dog saying, well, this job's changed, hasn't it?
A new breakthrough in cloning comes in the form of Ping Ping, the sheep, created using roundworm DNA in order to create a higher level of unsaturated fatty acids. Scientists say the sheep contains a good type of fat, although the sheep itself thinks it's just got big bones. At the end of round two, the scores are Jeremy and Roisin have got 8 points, but so too have Justin and Rory. Before we start round three, here's a cutting from Golf World magazine.
We asked top golfers to reveal their unusual rituals and superstitions. Bubba Watson says, before every round, I give my wife a kiss on the first hole.
And our thanks to Graham Spencer for sending us that. Jeremy, which bard might have found it hard to work alone?
Well, it's Shakespeare week on the home service. Because William Shakespeare, had he been born, which he was, would still have been dead. And it was his birthday this week, and apparently he had a co-writer. Probably he had a co-writer, William, because, well, you know, he was from a small market town in South Warwickshire, Stratford-upon-Avon, came to the big city, probably a bit out of his depth. He met up with a co-writer called Tommy Middleton, who was a Londoner. And he'd say, right, show me, I've got a busting guard here for the play, right? It's about a Jewish bloke and his daughter, right? It's called The Merchant of Redditch. Tommy would say, no, Willie, boy, look, the thing is, right, he's London cosmopolitan, not so like, you know, continental type. You want somewhere a bit flash, you know, a bit Italian, you know what I mean? Like Venice or something. All right, Venice, okay, The Merchant of Venice. And that's how they went on. Another one, two gentlemen of Walsall.
I went to Stratford-upon-Avon and had a look at all the places, and Shakespeare was born just round the corner from the William Shakespeare Museum. That must have confused him when he was growing up.
It was only All's Well That Ends Well, wasn't it? The comedies, because needed to gag up his comedies, because they are rubbish. I mean, Shakespeare, tragedies are good, comedies, bloody rubbish. Oh, two twins, not confusing, one's a boy, one's a girl. It doesn't work. It doesn't work, Shakespeare. It doesn't work.
I like Shakespeare when his best work was when he collaborated with Gwyneth Paltrow. Yeah.
A new analysis suggests that Shakespeare's All's Well That Ends Well could have been co-written by fellow playwright Thomas Middleton. The play has an abrupt change of style at the end of Act Two when the noble Bertram and his follower Perullus prepare to flee France for Florence, only to stumble on an escaped Nazi war criminal whose ties to the international banking system are part of a conspiracy that leads all the way to the White House. I haven't read it. 2 points to Jeremy. Rory, can you empty your bag, please?
What now?
Yeah.
this is something to do with a bit of shoplifting.
Shoplifting, yes.
This is self-service things, and people have just been taking it a little bit too literally. That's the only thing. Something like a third of people have either admitted or owned up or have been found to be shoplifting by using the self-service tools. Is that right?
Yeah.
Was it a third of people or a third of chefs? I don't know. And I can't get a hang. Do you
use
them?
I hate them.
I hate them. I can't
hate them
stand
with
them.
Such a passion I can't reach. And that unexpected item in the bagging area. Okay, yeah. It's really not ever that. It's not like you look and there's a goblin. It's. But if they want to cut thefts at self-service checkouts, could they just have members of staff scan your items for you?
Two Mavericks.
If anybody's listening, can I just put a personal plea out? If anybody works in the supermarket who's listening to this show now and you're working this weekend and you get that moment where you're scanning items in yourself and you go beep, beep, and then the third one doesn't go. Instead of looking for the number, instead of going for assistance, just look up. Just look at the person who's stood in front of you, another human being, who's just looking at you with the eye language going, put it through. It's really not worth your effort. You work for Tesco's, they make a billion a second. It's plum tomato, send it through. Who cares?
There's no challenge in that. You see, what's happened to the dignity of the old-fashioned criminal? People didn't used to do things like that. They used to have a van with false number plates, stockings out there. They used to have shooters. They'd have a lock-up in Nine Elms, somewhere like that. There's no dignity in crime anymore.
I once was using one of those machines, and I was wearing a black and white jumper, and I accidentally scanned myself, and I came up as a value aubergine. A third of us have admitted to stealing items at supermarket self-service checkouts. Everly Stone, a psychologist, said, "These statistics show a lack of morals in this country today, proof that people looting and rioting last summer was just a warning of the flagrant courgette theft that was to follow." Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings that the teams have brought along, Mr. Hardy.
This was sent in by somebody, and it says, "Sussex to get no respite from April showers until May."
Ms. Connolly.
This is a cutting from the iPhone TV Guide app. At 7:50 p.m, don't tell the bride. 8 o'clock, I woke up gay. 9 p.m., don't blame the dog.
Mr. Morehouse.
Mine's come from Mr. Steve Doughty of Haltwhistle in Northumberland. And again, it's from a TV guide. This is from the FreeSat guide information for the Saturday cookbook. Joining Nadia Swahala and Mark Sargent as chef, Aaron Craze, and actress turned food writer, Faye Ripley. Recipes include Indian spice meatballs and Bakewell cake. This programme contains scenes of a sexual nature and acts of violence.
This one's sent in by Dalwyn Atwell of Bracknell, and it's from the Wokingham Church newsletter. It says, "Parking. A number of residents of Sturges Road have complained about bad parking. Please do not park on double yellow lines, do not park on the pavements, and do not swear or make rude gestures to the people who rightly complain about your bad parking. It does not help if you promise to pray for people that they may have an improved state of mind."
Let's take a look at the final scores. Justin and Rory have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Jeremy and Roisin for 13. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from Birkenhead News sent in by John Bogan.
Local resident makes a stand on dog mess.
And with that, goodbye.